This is the Authentic Persuasion Show. Hey, everybody, Jason here. Welcome to the Authentic Persuasion Show, and welcome to the third and final part, which I'm kind of sad about because I really enjoyed this, the conversation with Beth Renninger from the University of South Carolina's Darla Moore School of Business. Beth spent time in operations and in marketing, and then ended up in sales, which if you want to find out how you end up in sales, make sure to check out part one about authenticity. And then she went into leadership, and then she went into a role where she was a buyer, a sophisticated buyer, which means she was buying some intense things and required to make some real good purchasing decisions. And now she's at the university teaching the future of sales. On that note, Beth, are you ready to talk about this future of sales and wherever that ends up today?
I'm ready. Let's see.
Do you have the answer?
Do you have a crystal ball?
I do not. You know, what's funny about me is this is one category that I am not great in and I haven't been, which is prognosticating about the future and making predictions. I am generally a late bloomer and slow to adopt trends. I just always have as a kid, whether it's technology or fashion or anything like that. So my brain is thinking behind the times and not changing versus people who are thinking forward. So I have no answers. That's why it's nice to be on this side. I can just ask questions. So let's talk about buyers first, the future of sales and or the now of sales. What do you think buyers want more of or less of from salespeople?
Less cold, uninformed, cookie cutter outreach, more customized, meaningful, relevant, solution-oriented communications, more research before you contact me, more respect. I think sadly, and in some of these jobs that are really hard, if you are a BDR, SDR, ADR, you got numbers to hit. And you're trying to get your X number of calls, X number of emails sent, and you may or may not have a lot of time to make them really smart. But what I will say is that being more relevant will always help you. And I know that because I was managing a buyer's inbox and an email to say, how am I going to decide? Am I going to look at any of these? Who's going to get any of my, like, a couple seconds of attention? And so in the future, the thing is, so now I'll get on a little bit of a soapbox here, that I think when it comes to the future of sales, it is just not about the frontline sales professionals, those BDR, ADR, SDRs. This is about the organization that sits above them. And how you manage and how you lead sales professionals. Because a lot of people want to talk about the impact of AI on those frontline sales interactions and the tools and the productivity and efficiency. But my observation, both as a leader of a sales organization and as someone at the bottom of the stack, there is math, and I've been told this by some companies, we have our math that is X number of outreach, goes to this many meetings booked, goes to, and that stacks mm-hmm. up. And then you have, pick a number, 10, 8, 6 levels of managers above those frontline forces saying, well, I'm going to throw some stretch objectives in there. I'm going to show that we're doing a really good time, really good job, and we're going to cover our risk by just making more calls, sending more emails. And I hope that in the future, our math, the sales math gets smarter and that it's just not a matter of everybody piles on the frontline sales force, that we use tools and technologies to enable them to be smarter and more strategic, and that we learn how to manage those kinds of interactions instead of just having it be a volume game. Because as long as it's a volume game, yeah, you're going to have, you know, X number of volume going out in thousands of calls and thousands and, you know, millions of emails. But I do think that that is going to be where AI is going to quickly learn how to make an email better. So is it just a matter of volume anymore? AI will never be a human being. You cannot have a relationship with AI. I've been watching this and talking to a lot of my students about the impact of this. It might look like a relationship, but it is not a human relationship. And so it, as we figure out, and in my last job before education, leading the digital transformation at a large company, the thing I always said to my team is we need to figure out what humans can do well and then figure out what systems can do well and technology can do well. And how do we leverage the best of both? I think now, although that was 10 years ago, I think that we're still in that place where we're trying to figure that out. And I think the future will look a lot different than the past when it comes to that. And the companies that figure that out and treat those frontline resources will be the ones where people want to work there. They will be the ones where no one wants to leave, no matter how many times they're being poached by another company. They will be successful from a market perspective and a profitability perspective, and they'll have a future path going forward that's much less rocky.
I think what's so important from that side is again, from the buyer's perspective as well, because I love what you're talking about, which is the numbers game. And I call it the sales success formula, which is, you know, again, the outreach, the activities, because you can only control activities and actions, right? We all know you can't control results. So you have to put in some effort, but what's the right effort, which is what I love you're talking about, which is shifting more to a quality over quantity approach. And from a buyer's perspective, the thing is the more quantity that happens, buyers tune it out. Think about how everyone reacts now if there's a TV commercial that comes on that you can't skip. Grab your phone, take that opportunity to go do something else. Like, we just want to tune it out. We don't want that in our life. And most people haven't tolerated that for a long time. And so think about it. You're a company, you have all these numbers, like you said, the stretch goals, and let's just hammer the world. Every once in a while, I see that on LinkedIn where it's like this person who's proud of their million cold calls and what they learned from. It's like, that's gross. Like, to me, that's terrible. What did you do to a million people that you cold called, right? Like why? Why would that be necessary? And again, there's usually some underlying thing, and maybe it's a big team, but still, it's like, where is that? Because again, people are great at tuning it out. Even your example of being a buyer and the kind of emails that you got, then every once in a while you get one where it's like, this is actually valuable and it resonates and it was a real person and they put some effort into it. And like you said, the respect and the research, which is that example you gave in part one with the woman that emailed you even with the video. And it's like, okay, this person took the time and did some research and is offering a potential solution. Didn't work out, but you know, that's definitely a win from their side. And I think that's great. From the sales side, obviously, it's the inverse of what you just said, or it's to match all of those things. But what do you see for the future of sales, especially going off of what you just said about the people doing the people things and the systems doing the system things?
Yeah. From the sales side, I'm reminded of when I sound like I'm 100 years old when I say this, but I'm going to say it anyway. When the internet first started to blow up and change everything in how we did marketing, I loved that because I literally said, this changes everything. Instead of message push from companies, we know what you need. We're going to show you, tell you why you need it, and here's where to buy it. The power of the mouse, the power of the swipe, the power of the pinch, pick a thing, however you interact with whatever device, the consumers or the buyer in that case kind of went into the driver's seat. And how we did marketing, how we did sales changed significantly. To me, this feels like a very big moment, just like that was, where nothing was ever the same again. The power has shifted even more so to buyers. We have technologies that are going to help us do a better job of crafting messages, but there is still work that has to be done. And so the winners in this space and the winners in this time and the winners in the future of sales are going to be the ones that are willing to do the work, to experiment, to measure, to try things, to fail. I just think it's timeless. Keep your eyes on your customer. I learned that in the very beginning of my career working in operations, and it has been a focus that has never, it's never steered me wrong. So if you look at who your customer is or might be, what problem you solve, then it just becomes a matter of how do I communicate that? The how, the where, the what activities are included in that. That all changes over time as various tactics are used. But the fundamental process underneath it is the same, but companies that figure out what is the best way to do the how are going to be the ones that win. And the same with employees, right? Because I say this to students, don't go into sales if you think it's going to be easy. And I just talked about frontline people, and there shouldn't be like this snowball that rolls downhill and lands on an SDR's head. But at the same time, if you are an SDR, ADR, BDR, or you are an account executive, or you are a field sales manager, you have to do your part, which means you need to learn, you need to research, you need to make your outreach, whatever that looks like. You need to have your meetings. You need to be a good listener. You need to ask good questions. If you don't want to continually change and learn and grow and pivot and try new things, sales is not the career for you. I've always loved that aspect of sales. It's always changing and always different. There are other careers that is much more predictable. Things, you know, accounting is much more predictable and everything's nice and neat and tidy and you're going to kind of do the same thing and rules over time might change. But the way you do it is less going to change so fundamentally.
Why do you think in that point you made about keeping your eye on the customers, when I hear you say that, that sounds like something that salespeople and companies still don't do, which is keeping their eye on the customer. Otherwise, wouldn't need to bring it up, right? It would just be automatic. Why do you think salespeople and or companies don't do that and keep their eye on their customers?
They're looking for things they can measure. And a customer focus isn't measured on the sales side. It's measured on the back end more, you know, once you get them. Before they are, while they're still a prospect and they're not yet a customer, what you can measure is your outreach activity. You were talking about this. And the understanding of your prospects is much harder to measure. And we all have math in our jobs. If you don't measure it, it didn't happen, was one of the sayings we used to have. And that's very true. You know, when you're running a large enterprise, if you're on the buyer side or the sales side, you got a lot of pressure, a lot of things that you're trying to achieve and do, and things that are stitched together, and it all rolls up to the top of what's being reported to Wall Street if you're publicly traded. So high stakes game. But it's hard to measure some of these things, and it's hard to quantify. And if you can't quantify it, it's hard to report it. If you can't report it, it's hard to be held accountable to it or for it. And so some of these things that are more qualitative in nature versus quantitative, I think will be the future of work, because AI is going to crank out the quantitative stuff. The qualitative things, I think, are a fit for our human brains. I think that's where humans excel, is in the gray space of figuring out what we don't yet know and how to do things. So to me, that could be fun. Again, I like disruption. And so that could be fun to figure out what that's going to look like. But I don't know. So that's kind of what I'm thinking there.
Where do your students now and over the time you've been teaching them embrace technology, see it as a tool, or lean on it too much as a crutch or an easier way to get through things? or out of
So this generation, they're just beautifully, wonderfully made and unique to this point in time. And so many people talk smack and trash about these young people, and I love them and try to say they are perfectly made for this point in time. Those of us that sold years ago needed different skills. These students, soon to be grads, have the skills that they need. So what looks to people maybe of other generations as, you know, they're snowflakes and they think things should just be easy is because they technology made things easy in their lives. Where they struggle is some of the more human interactions. And that's part the propensity to use a device. It's part backside of pandemic impact on their educational experience. But I also think that developing patience. It was one thing way back when to mail a letter and wait, right? You had to wait for someone to get that letter and then for someone to respond. They're used to instantaneous responses and instantaneous feedback. So the speed at which technology moves is not unsettling for them, but for people in other generations, it is unsettling and it can create fear. They are much more, it's go time, let's do this. Let's find a way to do things faster. Let's be smarter. That's what I see. And where the rub of the market and some of these companies is with some of these Gen Zs, they go in there, they use technology, they're pulling data, you know, they're pulling spreadsheets, they're sorting, they're reprioritizing, they're making strategic recommendations on this is how I would like to approach selling and here's why. And they're being told that's not how we do things. The math of the company says we do it this way. And they look at that and they're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Why would you do it that way? It's slower. It's not as smart. It's not as strategic. But if you look to the past to be an indicator of the future, then maybe you would make a decision that way. And so to me, these students are set up for success. They can figure out how to do anything in about 30 seconds or less with a couple of Google searches. They don't, you know, all they need is a phone and some Wi-Fi. And even if they don't have Wi-Fi, they'll find a hack. They'll find a way around anything. So the problem-solving skills are extraordinary. They just think they need permission in some instances. They're not used to not having a rubric. That's another thing. But I do, I guess the overwhelmingly positive thing is their comfort with technology, their ability and comfort to work well with a crowd, right? They are not as competitive individually as we used to be. And again, you could put a label on that to say they're slackers. I don't think they're slackers. They're cooperators. They are collaborators. They like that. It's how they think. It's how they're wired. And my God, we need that in this world right now. We need collaborators. It is not, which I think positions them well for sales, as we've been talking about, Jason, where they like to work together on solutions. That's what sales is, right? They don't feel like it's me versus you. And so when we talk about sales from that place, it's very appealing to them to say they're altruistic. They have altruistic hearts. They want to make the world a better place. They want to help people. They think the only way they can do that is by working at a nonprofit or and I'm like, you volunteer on the weekends and nights, you make money during the week. And both are true and both are good. And there's plenty of opportunity in nonprofits. Maybe you do development work for them. If you think you like sales, there's lots of ways you can tap into being altruistic and wanting to make the world wherever you are a better place.
And I think what's important too is making the world a better place, even within a role, let's say like sales, right? And shifting the way sales is done. And especially, and this is what I say all the time, especially if you're selling something that the world actually could use and does provide a benefit to the buyers of the product or service. If you're selling crap the world doesn't need, like that's something different. But if it will actually help somebody get to a better place in their business. And then their business is employing people or supporting that business owner's family or whatever it is that you're selling, even B2C, then that's also okay when it's done for the right reasons in the right way, which I think is important, especially when people think, oh, like you said, I love that you said, you know, I have to go work at a nonprofit or volunteer in order to make a difference or help. It's like, well, you could just, you know, do things different than what you think they are or what it is in that role. With, because you brought it up a couple of times, with technology, let's say like either AI or the things that are out there, what do you see for the future of sales when it comes to tech and or things disrupting it? Or what is what's your crystal ball say for that?
My crystal ball is a little foggy on that, probably because like you, I call myself a lovable laggard when it comes to technology. I've seen a lot of things change over time, and a lot of things that were supposed to be the thing, you know, the next best thing that turned out to not be so great. I am an optimist, and the optimistic side of me says, I hope that AI can take some of the drudgery out of sales, some of the things that get in the way of people loving their jobs, which is probably some of the administrative reporting kinds of things. Like as AI can analyze phone calls, I'm certain there will come a time when there's a plug-in from the phone call that updates the CRM so that a sales SDR, ADR, BDR doesn't have to do that because it's a critical function. It's critical information. I was just on an email thread of somebody reaching out to me, and I'm like, oh, dude, you're three steps behind. Well, like what the latest status is, but it's because somebody else that works at that company isn't updating the system real time. And that's because that person probably doesn't have time. And so I'm certain that that's a invaluable role that technology could play. And again, I think the same question I asked a lot of years ago to say, what can humans do well and how do we set them up for success? And what can systems, software, technology do well, and how do we harness that power without saying it's all or nothing in one way or the other? So that's one example that I think could be really powerful, is to take the things that sales professionals don't like to do. And I think it's true. I didn't like filling out reports when I was a sales professional, and I don't know a single sales pro that does like to do that. We all like the human interaction part of it, the strategy, the problem solving, the talking to people, the listening, the getting things done. We don't like the paperwork side of it. And so I think that's a technology that could be immediately beneficial that everyone would get on board with.
Well, and I think that goes to what you said. I think it might have been in part two, where it's, you know, the people doing the people things and the systems and the processes doing the system and the process things. You know, what is it in this day and age, even right now, 2023, that we still need humans to do in the sales process when we need them to interact with other humans who are scared and confused and have goals and hopes and help them make the right decision for them, right?
Yes.
Inherently, the people in sales just go to sales. They don't like the other stuff. You know, I think there's always a balance with actually doing the admin and updating the CRM. And when you get to a certain level, I found with salespeople is with a sales professional, they actually are good at the CRM and at the paperwork because they understand those are the tools they need to be good at in closing the deals. And then there's the, you know, going back to the first episode, which is the center of attention, the loud, the charismatic storytelling, like just wants to talk to people salesperson who literally CRM is blank, their paperwork's always wrong, and they want everyone else to do that work for them because they just want to talk to people. And so where can you plug in tech to help that? Where can the company help that person and assist them? And where is that person just too much all over the place and not, you know, a good fit for sales anymore?
And I think that's an instance where the students or grads will say, there's a tech, why would I swivel chair from this conversation to sit over here to update the CRM? Isn't there a solution that would make that happen automatically?
Yeah. And it's funny because that's my reaction to so many things. It's 2023. Why am I having to do X? Right. And I'm not in the younger generation. And so it's not like I was raised with all this stuff, but evolved. But it's to a certain point, it's like, why are we doing this? Like, I could literally, in the middle of our podcast right now, I could have ordered lunch for it to be here and then like show up at the door. I don't have to do anything. Like, why would I have to do X? And I agree with you. It's like, okay, where can the technology take that burden off, get it done, put it in there, like into the CRM, so you just don't have to. And then where's that balance with the people putting some effort into the CRM so they actually know what's going on, so that they can then be prepared, which is the research and respect side when they talk to that person the next time, right? Because some of it is having it in the system. Some of it is knowing it's there and remembering it and then using it, right? There's my concern is that if everything is so automated and the CRM's always there, is that person going to reference it? Are they going to remember it? Or are they just going to go into the next one assuming they already know everything?
That's a great point. It's all part of learning, the learning process, right? And so some of the things that we do in our sales classes, like I talked about the index cards in the first episode, are intentionally old school. And I tell the students that you're going to do some things because I want your brain to slow down and I want you to write things because the research shows that writing uses a different part of your brain than when you're typing and you're not. We can kind of do that without thinking about what we're actually writing or what we're typing down. And so what constitutes learning, what constitutes research, I think is going to be really interesting. And I just think from the beginning of time, someone that really knows what they're talking about, that has really prepared, that really cares, is obvious from someone who's flying by the seat of their pants. The sales professionals know one versus the other, as do the buyers.
Makes sense. And it's so true. And, you know, I think that's where it's so important for salespeople to focus on what their job is, not just to sell, but like all the parts and everything we've talked about in all three of these episodes, from authenticity to persuasion, the sales process, to respecting the buyers, to doing the research, and which is then a form of respect where you're, you know, coming prepared. Because again, salespeople might not like to hear this. You need them more than they need you, I promise. And so what does that relationship look like now and in the future? So thank you for all of this, Beth. This has been absolutely great. For people tuning in, there's a lot that happens in and out of podcasts. This recording has actually gone really long because of the sections in between where we got to talking before starting the next segment, because we recorded this in one block for these three episodes. You can hear it in my voice. I'm getting over a sinus infection, but I literally, so excited. Can't stop talking about this stuff. And you've been so great. There's been so much that you've shared. And I truly appreciate you coming on here. For people who want to connect with you, want to find out more, want to follow what you're doing, if they're in the, obviously in the area where the University of South Carolina is and they're a corporation, they want to hire, they want to get involved, potential students, future students, current students, make sure to check out the links in the show notes, both for you on LinkedIn and then also the USC's selling success program. Make sure to check that out. And again, thank you, Beth, for what you're doing to shape and change the future of sales, because that's the only way sales is going to change at scale is people like yourself and the other universities that are really making an impact early and often with the future salespeople.
Thank you. Thank you, Jason. Thanks for the work that you're doing that positively influences the sales profession. It's been really fun to be here today on all three episodes, and appreciate the interest in the Center for Sales Success and the things that we're doing with the students at the University of South Carolina. So thanks so much for having me.
Of course. And it's why I do this, because I want to promote more of this out there so people are aware. Because again, like I said, when I was writing my book, I didn't even know this was a thing. And literally just learning about this now, again, that lovable laggard, like you said, I feel like I'm late to trends. And here it is. So hopefully more people can learn from this. As always, thank you for tuning in, for watching this, for being a part of this. Make sure to interact, share, and be a part of this conversation. If you're already in sales, learn from this, adjust, pivot, change what you're doing. If you're a sales leader, please go back and listen to this. This was truly a masterclass in sales through all the parts and what Beth talked about. And I'm not just saying that because I completely agree with her 100% on pretty much everything that she said, but it lays it out perfectly. If you want to adjust and pivot and help your sales team win now and in the future, like, this is it. This is the blueprint. So please take this. Let's change the way sales is done, way people think about sales. And as always, thank you for helping fill the world with authentic persuaders.